Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rutolo, and I'm also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program today. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. No, I know we are, because we have Kirsten Milliken, Dr. Kirsten Milliken, on the show with us. She lives and works in beautiful Portland, Maine. She has ADHD, and she's going to teach all of us today how to have some fun with our ADHD. So I'm going to bring Kirsten on the show right now. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi, Justine. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. How are you? Good.
Very well. Thanks.
I'm so excited to have you on the show. You can teach all of us how to have fun with ADHD.
Absolutely.
So, Kirsten, can you tell us a little bit about your own walk through ADHD, how you were diagnosed, and how you got to this place of realizing that play was so important?
Certainly, yep. So I have a couple of kids.
Okay.
And when my youngest, it starts there. My life was nothing before I had children. But I had two of them, and then I started having fun. my youngest one, Oliver, when he was about 7 years old, he was at the pediatrician for his annual visit, and doctor was a friend of mine. We were chatting. Oliver, when we were waiting for the doctor, had done a 20-minute musical number in his underwear for me to entertain me. He was on a roll that day. The doctor, it was hysterical. The doctor came in, though, and he had to start having his exam, and so he got up on the table, and, you know, he had his socks on because he was sliding around the floor, and he asked Oliver to take his socks off so that he could see his feet, and Oliver took one sock off. And then he saw the reflex hammer, and he started playing with it. And so, you know, the doctor and I kept chatting and watching him, and a couple minutes later, he realized he still only had one sock off, and so he asked Oliver to take his other sock off, and it took another few minutes before the sock came off. And the doctor looked at me and said, "Have you ever thought maybe he has an attention issue?" And I said, "I don't know, it's just fun. What are you talking about? Like, he's just goofing around. There's nothing wrong with it." And so he said, "Yeah, you may just want to consider whatever." And, you know, mind you, the doctor knew I'm a psychologist. He knew that my, you know, niche in our community was working with people who had ADHD. And so, you know, why would my kid, like, no, he's just like me. It's okay. So we went to the parent-teacher meeting the next week, and the teacher said, "You know, I noticed in Oliver's records that his teachers for the last couple of years had made comments on the fact that compared to his peers, he has a really hard time just sitting still and paying attention, and I'm wondering if that's something that you've noticed." And she had a special education background, and so now I'm hearing the message twice from two different professionals. And I was like, okay, so maybe that's it. So we went back to the doctor and we talked to him a little bit because Oliver was having a hard time in school. And did the medication trial thing. But, you know, when we realized, when I accepted the fact that maybe he has ADHD, if he's, you know, compared to his peers, he's a little bit different. I know that there's a really high level of heritability for ADHD, and I thought there is no way his father has ADHD. He's like the last person who has it. And I know that I have many relatives who definitely do. So at that point, I realized that the genetic link had to be me. And, you know, like many adults who get diagnosed when they get older, everything fell into place. It was all like my whole history, my whole life became clear to me. So, you know, I had been the professional that everybody said, you know, send your clients if you want to know if they have ADHD or they have attention issues, send them to Dr. Milliken. She seems to get it. And, you know, obviously on that day I realized why I got it because, you know, it made sense. It was how I was living my life. So at that point I formally decided that, you know, what I was going to pursue professionally. It just kind of had been, you know, something that had come my way, just happenstance that that's who I was working with at the time. But I went to Jeff Copper, as a matter of fact, who has Attention Talk Radio, and talked with him a bit. Yep. And talked to him about, you know, being in the ADHD community, and I had listened to his podcast, and then I went to a conference with other ADHD professionals, and just really got into this whole thing, and I ended up at ADCA, you know, ADD Coaching Academy.
Right.
And during one of the classes there, we were doing some values exercises, and it spanned two classes, and on the second class, I was talking about my values based on the exercises we had done, and play was like the number one value. And anybody who knows David Gwork knows that he is like a very playful conversationalist. And so he spent the entire class, sorry for my classmates, but he spent the rest of the class talking about play and ADHD and how fabulous it was. And I started doing all the research and thinking, it has to be obvious that there's a connection between play and ADHD, right? The neurochemicals that are involved are the same. You know, we're talking about how important it is for learning. We're talking, you know, all of these connections that to me seem so obvious in the media and every place else. And I couldn't find any real research directly connecting them, except for some research that had been done with rats. So I started just putting all the information together myself. I didn't want to go out and conduct research, but I certainly wanted to talk about how it made sense that these things were connected. And then, so, you know, talking with all of my colleagues and friends and clients, you know, who are in the world of ADHD, the more I was talking about it, the more everybody was affirming to me, well, yeah, I'm at my best when I'm being playful or I'm playing or I'm enjoying my something that, you know, is interesting to me. So it just made sense. So I started business and started looking at everything playfully, which, you know, was great for business, but it was also great for life. So
let me ask you, when you talk about looking at things playfully, are you also talking about that creative side that we have that comes out? It's amazing.
You know what?
I mean, there's so many.
It definitely helps. Because we sometimes see things differently than other people do, maybe from a different angle or a different perspective, or we have a different reference point, or we think about how we could put things together differently, things like that. But it can be as simple as just, you know, recognizing some subtle playfulness in a conversation. Or, you know, I don't know, sometimes walking down the street behind people, if you can catch pieces of their conversation, and sometimes it sounds really funny, especially if you don't know the context of it, and sometimes even if you do. And it's like, I didn't know I'm talking about that in the middle of the street. It's just, you know, it's kind of funny. So, and other times when people just are looking at things as, you know, that's horrible. I just had this happen the other day. Somebody said, oh, whatever so-and-so did to you was horrible, and I thought, no, actually, I think they were just trying to have fun. And I had to explain how maybe it was a very playful, you know, funny kind of thing that this person had done. And it hadn't occurred to the other person I was talking to. So, you know, which made, I don't want to get upset about things that much. There was no need to. And looking at it playfully made it way more interesting. So,
exactly. Yeah. So let me ask you, if I called you up, I was a client, and I said, I want to come in. And I want you to help me with my ADHD. So what do you do with your clients in terms of, you know, playing and having fun? And can you walk us through that?
Sure. I mean, some of it is very standard, you know, I don't work as a psychologist with my clients. So of course, that training is always there. But I do work as a coach with them. And so some of that is, you know, standard operating procedure. You're going to be, you know, talking with a person about what their strengths and challenges are. And, you know, a natural strength that people with ADHD have is being playful, because it's the thing that lights our brain up, right? So whether somebody was the class clown, or they didn't pay attention and they were doodling, or, you know, whatever it was, usually if you look at the thing that they got them through the difficult tasks and the places where they really excelled, it has to do with being playful, trying to engage their brain more. So really what we're looking at with strengths is, you know, where does play come up for you? How do you play? So if you look in the book that just came out this year, Play ADHD, there's a list of play personalities. And so one of the places
okay.
that I ask some of my clients to start are two things. First, how did you play as a kid? And we have a lot of conversations about that because sometimes it's not always easy to bring that to mind, especially
right.
if things feel hard right now, right? So we
yeah.
really got to kind of jumpstart the brain and start having those conversations about what do you remember as a kid playing? So,
right.
So Justine, what do you remember about playing as a kid?
I
mean, does that
oh, I was
mind?
Always – I was always outside and putting on plays. We had an alleyway that connected, I grew up in New York, that connected the two blocks of row houses, and we were out there putting on plays and, you know, making scenery, and we were having a great time. I mean,
that is
a really good memory for me.
I can hear that. I can absolutely hear that. And so, and you know, when you're putting on plays, there's a lot of different pieces that go into that, whether you're an actor or the director or the set builder or, you know, there's all kinds of things, right? Or the musical director, maybe, I don't know. And so figuring out what it was about those that you really enjoyed, like was it actually creating it? Was it having the audience? And so getting really detailed about what was it that just lit you up about doing that experience?
Wow.
And really creating this list, you know, it's the beginning of a playlist, getting to know yourself as a playful person again. And what I find
right.
is a lot of the adults who come to me will say, like, I don't really play that much anymore. And but as we start to talk about these things, how they and identifying what their play personalities are, they start realizing that there are some very subtle and then sometimes some very obvious ways that they act, that they either play or that they are playful in what they do. And sometimes it's a little overboard, as with a lot of things, but we're looking at the times when it's adaptive, when it's helpful to them, and times, you know, and then we're starting to get creative about other ways that they can use that. And keeping it kind of top of mind, always, you know, when they're struggling, they need to have a way to remember that maybe they need to do things differently. They need to add a little color to something, or they need to dress it up, or they need to just
right.
do it differently. So they're engaging their brain.
So for those of us who haven't seen your book,
yep.
can you talk about the different kinds of playful people that are out there? All the so maybe some of us can identify with one or two?
So some of the play personalities, absolutely I will. So a lot of these come from Stuart Brown's book that he wrote about play, and
okay.
we've added to them and then also added some more descriptors. So the first one might be the joker, right? Somebody who likes to tell jokes, is kind of a comedian, somebody who maybe likes to go to comedy shops or likes to be on stage telling jokes, or maybe just
okay.
a person who, you know, likes to come to the water cooler and amuse everybody. And that
okay.
person, especially with ADHD, can kind of be the class clown.
Right.
The kinesthete is another one. And kinesthetics has to do with movement. So people who like to play and are kinesthetes like to move around. So maybe they like to dance or they might, like, I have a trampoline in my backyard. I love the feeling of bouncing up and down. It feels
wow.
very good. Some other people, David Gwork again, often talks about how the thing that helped him to manage his brain was to have a rocking chair. He really likes to be in movement. People who are kinesthetes often do some of their best thinking when they're in movement, and they're
yes.
always looking for different ways to do that. Yep.
Yes.
And I just want to point out that some of, you know, it's not you have one or another type of play personality, you're likely to have multiple kinds.
Right.
Maybe some are stronger than others. And one example of that is the competitor, because people who like to move, as in the kinesthete, often are also very competitive. And so in that case,
oh.
they're more likely to want to play like maybe field games, you know, soccer or hockey, things like that, where they're being
right.
competitive. I like being competitive, not necessarily on a field, but even just with a timer, right, beating my own time. Or
right.
I tell everybody that when my senior year, my psychology teacher said to me, Kirsten, whatever you do, don't become a psychologist. And I joke that that's like the longest challenge I ever undertook, right, was to get my doctoral degree in clinical psychology, because I never went back. And, you know, I started day one in college and went all the way through as a clinical psychology major. So, give me a challenge, and I'm going to take it on. And I know a lot of people who have ADHD are like that, because it just lights up our brains.
Yes.
There's the artist. Yeah, right? So there's the artist or creator. That could be somebody who likes to do sets, you know, for theater, or just enjoys creating different things, putting things together, even websites or things like that.
Wow.
And then there's the director, another person who might have been involved in some of your play, right? So the person who maybe likes to organize things and put things together and direct people how to do things, right? There's also the storyteller, so using your imagination, coming up with stories. And I always laugh at that one, because I always think, you know, how many of us really enjoy embellishing the things that happen to us?
Laughing to myself about that.
Right.
Yes.
My friends are always like, your life is so much fun. And I'm like, my life is not actually as fun as it sounds. I just enjoy making it sound really fun.
That's great.
As long as you have enthusiasm and it sounds like a good story, everything sounds great.
Yes.
So,
just add some to it.
Exactly. Well,
yeah.
You know, enjoying the theater, I also always tell people, like, when I'm looking to tell somebody something or even to do a speech, it's about, I want to entertain myself. If I'm not entertaining myself, there's no way I'm going to entertain anybody else. So it has to be really fun and good, right? And then another one, again, from the theater is the performer. That's somebody who enjoys getting up on stage, or who just really likes kind of going all out and maybe, you know, taking on some fun characters, things like that. So those are some of the play personalities that people incorporate. Yeah, and so just by knowing that, though, you can kind of see how you could understand what kind of play you might want to engage in, just because you know what your play personality is.
Do you find that a lot of people that come to you initially don't even remember or can't even grab or understand the kind of play personality they are because of what they've been through?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times, first of all, they're not acknowledging that they even play, right? So even if we do start talking about childhood play, it can feel like a big leap at first to get to how they're engaging in play now. I always talk about my friend Jody, who is adamant that she doesn't play. and the more we started talking about it, the more she realized, like, in everything she does to keep herself organized, to keep herself on task, the work she does is very creative. She does graphic design and ads and marketing. But everything has to be with color, with interesting pictures and symbols, you know, whether it's on the screen or off the screen. And she realized, like, if she took that away, her brain would just shut down. That was her play for her, was coming up with these creative, fun ways to kind of keep herself engaged in the process that she needed to do. So,
This is so fascinating, because as you're speaking, I'm beginning to just feel myself, the different things that I can relate to. And the interesting thing is that, you know, when you take those things away from people, that can absolutely cause depression and can cause them to spiral downward.
Yeah.
And not too many people are talking about this aspect of it, you know? I mean, they're kind of like telling everybody. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. They're telling everybody.
No, I was just thinking how, you know, look, everybody has to grow up, right? But that doesn't mean you can't have fun. I love to laugh. My husband and I both have ADHD. We just went shopping, and we came home, and we looked at each other and said, where are the pants we bought for you? And both of us just looked. We could not remember that we left the store with those pants in our hand. I mean, it was hysterical. And see, what I loved is we both started laughing. There was no blaming each other. We went downstairs. Of course, the pants were in the car. But Right. It was just so funny to me because that's the way I like to approach life is through laughter. It makes my life so much better and easier every day. But there's so many people out there, Kirsten, and I'm sure you know them, that have such a hard time with that. Yeah.
They do.
You know, because there's a blaming part.
There is. And you know, and I know that a lot of your guests and you have talked about the fact that, you know, we all get all of these messages as we're growing up about, you know, that we should be ashamed that we're not working harder, that we're not, you know, living up to our potential, all of these kinds of things. And I think a lot of people with ADHD are resonating with a lot of Brené Brown's work on shame right now.
Yes.
For exactly those reasons. And I feel like, you know, being aware of that and starting to recognize that and reconcile it is really important. For me, I like to jump ahead because, you know, that's my nature. And go I can tell you, like, people who knew me before I started this quest around play and the connection to ADHD, my life was different. Like, you know, I wasn't, like, down and out or anything like that, but I was not as happy of a person as I am now. And just making that effort and kind of putting that lens on everything for myself and intentionally because I wanted to build this for myself changed everything. And I'm constantly, like, you know, front-loading my brain with dopamine and serotonin and oxytocin because I'm doing the things that are fun and playful to me as much as I possibly can. And I'm looking at the things around me. Right. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know,
which is so amazing. And
things with a laugh.
Exactly. And that's the kind of thing, because I do work with children and adolescents as well as adults, and I see that, you know, some of these kids are, because of what they hear about what they have, you know, they get labeled, and then they're just feeling so down because they're feeling so different when I can see all this power in these children and adolescents with, you know, they're funny, they're engaging, they're creative, they can dance, most of them can sing. I mean, it's amazing. But what is everybody focusing on? They're focusing on what they're not doing, like school, for example.
Right.
And it just drives me crazy because that's not what life's about.
Right. Well, you know, when they're on, and when they're not, they're not, right? These kids.
Right.
And you mentioned earlier about depression, and there's a famous play worker, which is an ironic kind of title, but Brian Sutton Smith, who just passed away, unfortunately, this year, but he had a quote, which is, the opposite of play is not work, it's depression. And so true, right? Play lights our brain up, whereas depression, right, brings everything down. We shouldn't be looking at, you know, we can approach work in a playful way, but depression is depression. We lose out on our creativity, our interest, our curiosity, our motivation, our energy. Everything is just gone when we're in that state.
Work. You know what, though? You said something before that really resonates with me because I happened to be scanning the internet one day for something, and I forget what it was, of course, but it came up and it was talking about don't tell people with ADHD to work harder because that doesn't work.
Right, no.
They're different. They're different workers. We have to work differently. I mean, that's just who we are. Our brains are different, and that's a great thing. That's not a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing. That you said something before about that, and I think that's very true. We can't tell kids or adolescents or adults, oh, no, you just have to work harder.
It doesn't.
It certainly doesn't work with what you do.
No, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for most kids and adults who have ADHD. I mean, if you put a kid or an adult in a standard educational or work setting for somebody who, you know, does not have that brain makeup, they might do well at first because it's a novel situation. But once that novelty has worn off and things become more, you know, habitual and routine, they're going to struggle. They're not going to, you know, be functioning optimally. And working harder is not going to change that. It's only going to make it worse. So everything's going to take longer. You know, they're going to be less happy. They're going to probably have more conflicts. They're going to be constantly doing things to kind of get their brains going, which may not necessarily be healthy strategies.
Right.
And rather than working harder, putting their nose to the grindstone, pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, really what they need to be doing is finding ways to engage themselves more, whether it's by standing up and moving around, having colorful things in front of them, you know, doing things in a playful way. One of the strategies I use is often working with other people. And it can be just another person in the room, or it can be somebody that I'm actually collaborating with on a project, because that gets my brain firing. But it has to do with knowing how, you know, where your strengths are, what your playful strategies are, and implementing them, and being able to implement them. And obviously younger kids don't always have that choice in the classroom setting.
Which is really kind of sad. Yeah. I had Dr. Radion back in June, I think it was, and because he just finished the book Spark. And he was talking a lot about how the terrible things we do in the classroom, you know, because everybody has to sit the same way and, you know, we can't be out of the box thinkers in the classroom. We all have to act the same way. And he was saying that, you know, the worst thing we can do, and I remember this as a kid, is somebody telling me to sit still. I mean, I couldn't sit still.
Yep.
I was constantly moving around in my seat. So he was talking about how they're trying to implement in schools around the country, you know, getting a kid on a treadmill when he's not focusing to turn his brain on. Yeah, well, what about what you have a great idea, too. What about, you know, having some fun time, like having them use colors or laughter or whatever it is that makes them feel good to turn their brain on?
Absolutely. I keep thinking, so Oliver, the one who's diagnosed with ADHD, a couple of years ago had a teacher who was complaining that she could not manage the classroom. She'd been teaching for 30 years, and we went in for the parent-teacher meetings, and first of all, I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to throw up when I walked into the room, because it was so much stimulation on all this stuff on the walls and piled up on all the desks and things like that. And you're wondering why you're having a hard time managing the kids. Like, I can't sit in this classroom to have a meeting with you. How do they do it all day long? I was like, wow. It was horrible, Justine. You know, and then she had this plan to get them to do their homework, because they weren't all turning in their homework every day, you know, all week, that when the entire class turned in all their homework for an entire week, that they would get an extra hour of play. And I said to her, there's no way on this earth that that's going to work, because no kid is going to work knowing that his extra recess depends on all these other kids. And it's like a maybe, like it's way off in the future. And
exactly.
Yes, and that was in October. That was in October. Come April break, it still hadn't worked. And I was laughing so hard, because I was like, you know, if you just gave them the extra recess to begin with, they probably would have all done their work. you're doing it the wrong way around. So,
because everything's about punishment, you know? I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, that might have sounded like she was giving a reward, but actually it was a punishment, because you had to sit through all these weeks of waiting for all these kids to finish their homework. You're absolutely right. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Well, and it's ironic, because they take away the things like music and art and recess, which are the things that activate their brains, because they're play, right? They're play. They're extra.
Yep.
They don't recognize that, in fact, those are the times when these kids are learning executive skills more so than when they're sitting down and doing math homework. And reading quietly. So they're actually taking away those opportunities to develop higher level skills that are the foundation of everything else that comes after it. And they're seeing it just as, you know, something that can be taken, because it can't be measured by taking a test. So it really is.
You have boys, did you say?
I have two boys.
Two boys or one boy? Two boys. Okay, I have two boys also. Do both your boys have ADHD?
Nope, just the younger one.
Okay. And so how have you been able to keep him playing and his brain turned on and having a great time at school and loving life?
He is just naturally a really fun kid. So
okay.
He loves to play. So if he says he's bored, I say, well, why don't you entertain me? And which can sound a little, you know, selfish of me, but what ends up happening is he goes and he dresses up and he ends up entertaining himself first and, you know, and then coincidentally
I
entertains
love it.
Me because I just love him being so silly. So
I love it.
Yeah. And
that's great.
And we talk about it all the time. So
yeah.
You know, he's very aware of how food affects him. He's aware of how, you know, how he acts and how he looks at things affects him.
Right.
He's a smart kid.
So great that you're making him aware of all these things.
Yes.
Because
yep.
To me, it's so important that we make our children aware of, you know, how they feel and what's happening. And, gee, something's not right now. Why is that? And,
yep.
You know, that they can embrace this instead of, I can't tell you, I'm sure you experience this. I know you work mostly with adults, but the amount of parents I have who don't want their kids to know anything about this. And
yeah.
I'm, you know, I brought my boys up. They both had ADHD. One is also on the spectrum. And I brought them both up to embrace this. They both had IEPs. They
yep.
both knew what their accommodations were. They spoke up in class for it. And they used to tell people they were special. That's why they got to go to a certain classroom to take their test.
Yeah.
They didn't turn it into a
yeah.
negative. They turned it into a positive. So,
right.
You know, I can't understand parents that want to hide it because what are we hiding? Is this a death sentence?
Yeah. Well, I worked in the public school system as a lead psychologist in my area. And it amazed me how the adults, whether it was a parent or an administrator or a teacher, they all thought that they were the experts on these kids. And it just, you know, I was like, why aren't the kids in on the IEP meetings? Oh, it's too much for them to understand. Why aren't the kids involved in if they have a behavior management plan? You know, they're just getting these plans imposed on them. We wonder why they don't work. And, you know, and why don't we ask the kids, like, what works for them? Because they're the experts. No matter what age they're at, they're smart
right.
little beings.
And oh, they
so,
are.
And I think this, yeah, I think the same thing, too. Kids know when they feel out of sync with other people. Oliver could
yes.
tell me, like, I feel different than everybody else in the classroom. And then
yeah.
when we were able to
yeah.
talk about it, it made sense to him. And so he didn't have to
right.
feel bad that it was some, you know, horrible thing. It was just how his brain was wired differently. He had to figure out different ways to do things. And when we could have those conversations, everything was easier.
Right.
Whereas when
right.
you and I grew up, especially as girls, like we weren't told that. We were just, there was something weird about us, right? And so,
yes.
you know, that was just, that was left to be a character judgment about us, as opposed to just
well, yes,
having
we had
an
the,
understanding.
We had the labels of I was lazy, stupid, and a procrastinator. First of all,
yep.
in first grade, who knew what that word meant?
If they're not telling you, then you didn't. Right. Right.
But, I mean, that's how I grew up. And this is why I
yeah.
had such a negative feel to my life for years, because that's what
yeah.
I heard. I didn't hear
yep.
you could dance, you could play the piano, you could entertain. No, I didn't hear that. I heard I
right.
was lazy in school. I hated school.
Yes.
It was
yes.
boring.
I know. We maybe went to I didn't find school boring until middle school. I have to say I was very blessed that in elementary school I had
okay.
wonderful teachers and classrooms and experiences, and oh, my goodness, it was just awesome.
Wow.
It wasn't until I got to fifth grade when I got smacked in the face, and not literally, but, you know, but with the sit down and do your work kind of stuff, it just was amazing to me how difficult it was.
Was it difficult?
Of, you know,
yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. I, you know, the difference yeah. between, you know, I had an open classroom in third and fourth grade, which was so much fun. It was awesome. You know, apparently I learned stuff that year, but it was just fun. And then I think it was sixth grade, actually was when it started because I was out in California in fifth grade, which was also fun. But in sixth grade, my big trauma that year was having to give an oral presentation in front of the class. And I remember just feeling like an idiot because I couldn't do it. You know, I had built this beautiful model for my presentation.
Wow.
It was gorgeous, and it took me hours, but I couldn't talk about it. And, yeah, the amount of pressure that was on us to, you know, conform. Yeah, you know it. So,
it was terrible. But, listen, let's talk about something that I think if you and I could totally figure out, we would just be billionaires. You know,
okay, let's do it now.
Let's do it right now. You talk a lot. You just spoke before about competitiveness and how somebody in high school said to you, "You will never be, or you can't be a psychologist." And you said,
"Yeah, don't do that."
Yes, I can.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are a lot of that, but there's also a lot of the other stuff where motivation. That's what I want to talk about with you. Is motivation, because motivation can be very difficult in our population. I mean,
absolutely,
for a lot of people, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. If we could figure this out today on the phone, we could just pack it in because we'll be good to go.
Tell me what we're going to figure out.
So I'm get stumped sometimes with some kids that come in, or adolescents, even adults who just don't have, they have all the ideas or they want to move forward. And you and I both know that kids that aren't doing well in school, that's not making them happy at all.
Right.
It's really hurting them. And so, but that motivation, that internal motivation to get moving, I don't know if you want to call that initiation, procrastination, which is the opposite of that, but what can we do? What do you do to help with motivation?
So I know that you've talked with Elaine Taylor-Klaus. You've had her on the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Elaine and I actually have done some presentations together. And one of the things that we include in the presentations are the five motivators that work for people with ADHD. I lump them all under play, but the subcategories are novelty, right? So making things novel, or, you know, it can be like when you're taking on a new task, right? The first time I try anything, it's interesting and fun. I'm learning, I'm doing something different, maybe I'm meeting a new group of people, whatever it is. Novelty can wear off, but sometimes you can take a task and you can make it novel. Like, you can take your homework and go into the bathtub and do it. Who does their homework in the bathtub, right?
You've just done something
that's silly, right? Well, it creates a story because now the next day you've got something to tell everybody at work or at school. Yeah, I did my homework in the bathtub last night. And that's a whole conversation right there, right? So you get the giggle in the moment, and then you get the residual story later on to tell everybody. And that's funny. There's competition, which we mentioned earlier, and that can be competition with other people. Or it could be competition with yourself. You know, can I beat my best time? Or can you beat the timer? It can be virtual or it can be live, right? Challenging somebody online. So there's all kinds of ways to incorporate competition when we're trying to get motivated. Urgency, which is that procrastination thing, like waiting until the last minute. And I know a lot of business professionals now are starting to talk about productive procrastination, right? And there's actually studies that have been done that show that if you're planful about your procrastination, it can actually be to your advantage, because what you're doing is you're giving yourself time kind of process whatever the problem is or the task is that you're going to have to approach. So if I have to write an article, and as soon as I think about it, I just sit down and write it, then I'm going to write the first thing that comes to mind. Whereas if I procrastinate on it until, you know, the day before it's due, I'll have given myself some time to think about it. And it's not always conscious, but when we have tasks that we have to do and they're unfinished, our brain naturally holds on to them in the background. Whereas okay. if we have a task and we can check it off on the checklist, our brain kind of lets it go. So
okay.
holding on to tasks, procrastinating on them, I'm telling everybody right now, it can be productive. So getting
okay.
you using that and getting down to when it, there's that urgency. So then you've kind of
right.
processed things, and now there's that urgency to write it, and you can just do it. So that's
right.
another motivator.
Right.
Interest
in what you're doing, you mean?
Right. So if it's not something I'm
okay.
interested in, yeah, I'm probably not going to do it. But if it's,
right.
if there's some way that I can, you know, if it's a task that I inherently have an interest in or, you know, or I can make it interesting to me in some way, like filing things is not interesting to me at all. But if I can turn it into a game, right, then it becomes
right.
interesting to
right.
me. Right?
Right.
So,
yes.
So finding a way to have interest in things. And then the last
right.
one is humor. So making it silly. And again, you know, a lot of these overlap, like doing your homework in the bathtub is kind of silly.
It is.
Or it can be like being the jokester, telling jokes, things like that. Or it can be wearing a funny hat or, you know, just doing things that are silly. Being the class clown again. So those are the motivators that work for people with ADHD. And again, all of them kind of fall into play. So if you've got that attitude towards things, you're usually incorporating some of that.
Which is great. And, you know, that whole procrastination thing, too, I think, I know that people get way too tied up in that. And I think the more tied up they get in it, then it stays.
Yeah.
I mean, like you're saying, when I have something I have to do, if I don't really feel like doing it, I'll sit on it for a while, but hear what you're saying. It does stay in your head, and you kind of play with it a little bit and think about it. And eventually when you do it, you get it done. But I think people are too tied up, especially it's a conversation that everybody's always talking about is procrastination.
As a negative thing, right? I have to
right.
How many clients come to me and say, like, one of my big problems is procrastination, and I always ask, why is it a problem? And they say, well, they wait until the last minute to get things done. And I say, I still don't have this problem. Well, that's not good. I really should be doing things ahead of time. And I say, well, so when you procrastinate, you know, you take a task, what's the goal? You know, I have to get this writing done, or usually it's something like that. Did it get done? Yep. Was it good? Yeah, it was really awesome. Well, so what was the problem? I shouldn't procrastinate because we've decided that, right? It's not a good thing.
Because everybody told us that.
Right.
Everybody told
ahead.
Us that.
We should schedule things. Yeah. So when you start letting go of things and realize maybe it works for me in some way, and you become
right.
conscientious about it, right? So give yourself permission and use it. Use it. Because
right.
I'm like, great, I don't have to get this done until the day before. I know it takes me, you know, 2 hours to do this. If I do it the day before, I'm still way out of schedule. And if that day I still can't do it, I still have the next morning. It's okay. Right? I don't have stress about it. You know, I'm good with it. I know what my limits
right.
are. So.
And I think that most of the time, it turns out to be our best work. I've had a lot of people say that.
Yeah.
Because we're, yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Because that's how the creative mind kind of works.
Work, right. But and even if it's not, people will say, oh, I probably could have done better if I. And I'm like, what would make you think that? Like, they're like, oh, well, I would have changed this and that and that and this. And I'm like, yeah, you wouldn't even have thought of that, those things, if you had written it earlier. So, okay.
It's very true.
Yeah. Right?
But there's certain things that people get stuck on. They get stuck on. So, like impulsivity, for example, right? Okay,
mm-hmm.
So there's some things about impulsivity.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things about being impulsive that, you know, might not be such a good idea. I can recall some of mine when I was very young that probably got me in a lot of trouble. But when you talk about playing, I mean, and you're funny and you're a jokester and somebody says something and you interject something very funny, what's wrong with that? I mean,
right. Right.
That's being playful. That's
funeral,
be having a good time.
You're at a funeral. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. It's all
yeah.
about perspective. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I think that we are we're not managing our brains well when we try and take everything so seriously and look at the, you know, what's wrong with me, what's wrong with this situation, what am I not doing right, and trying to, you know, just overly critical about all of it. We're not really working with our brain chemistry very well. And we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot. So, you know, back to the whole work harder thing, work harder, you know, there's less dopamine production, which means you're going to have even more problems. So really it's, you know, work differently, as you were pointing out. And impulse.
No, no, you finish. Impulsivity is
what? There are a lot of challenges that come with ADHD that, you know, get pointed out as, you know, defects or challenges, impulsivity, inattention, things like that. But there are also flip sides to having those qualities that actually, you know, can make us amazing. So, and that's true for everybody. Like everybody, whether they have ADHD or not, they have qualities that, you know, in certain situations are really great to have, and in other situations it doesn't really work out so well. So it's just a matter of how you use them.
Right. And also how you think about them. I mean, the mindset, to me, is one of the most powerful things. And so if we can get up every day, I happen to get up every day for the past 8 years, and I choose happiness. It's really hard to have a bad day, and I got up, and I made the choice to be happy. So, I mean, that's just a mindset that I have. And some people get upset because they're like, well, you're never upset. You're never, well, of course everybody gets upset. It's part of life, but you can pull yourself right back if you've chosen happiness for the day. And, you know, it's just really about having a certain kind of mindset. And I know that no matter what you, whether you have ADHD or not, there are people out there who are holding on to that negative side because they like that place. That's where they're comfortable being.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not a great place to be.
I agree.
They can laugh and have fun. And.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to point out, though, we've talked a lot about depression. I don't want to minimize the fact that people do become depressed. And it can feel impossible to just say, okay, I'm just going to go play and change my attitude and all of that. It can feel impossible. I recently wrote an article and was doing some research because for years we've talked about the fact that, you know, serotonin and norepinephrine, which are often related to depression, that when we have less of those in our system, that's the thing that causes depression. And what they're actually finding is that because we're not motivated, we're not energetic, we're not out doing activities that would stimulate the production of those, that's actually why those neurochemicals are low. So when we're feeling depressed, although it's a huge challenge, if we can make those little steps to looking to being playful or engaging in something, you know, some kind of play with people, that we're actually helping to facilitate our own recovery from depression. And it's a hard task. I've been there more than once.
Yeah.
So I don't want to minimize.
You know, how devastating it can be. I get it.
But, yep. But it's
it can be a terrible feeling, and like you're saying.
Yeah,
it's hard. It can be very hard to get up and to exercise and to do things like that. But if you can push yourself just a little bit, it can be different.
Yeah, there's a payoff. Yeah. There's a payoff. So.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Some people leave questions on my website. So what it sounds like you are saying is that sometimes procrastination is simply allowing our subconscious, the creative process, to work for us in solving our problems, right?
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
That's a really good question.
Right? So, absolutely. So, I have to say, so I did some research when I was writing my book. I asked people to tell me what their questions were that they wanted to know about ADHD and play and all of this. And a lot of people said, you know, that they didn't feel like they were allowed to play because they were just using it as a way to procrastinate. And so I do talk about that, right? It's hard. So, but sometimes we need to play to, first of all, have things kind of percolating in the background, Also, we need to play because we need to be front-loading the dopamine. So, you know, if I go out and I do something that is not work-related but I know is going to be a lot of fun, and, again, it can be as simple as going in my backyard and jumping on the trampoline or playing with my dog, but that gets the dopamine flowing for me. I've put off working for a little while, which some people can call procrastination, but I think it's productive for me because now the dopamine's flowing in that task that I really didn't want to do, that I've been putting off. When I come back to it, it doesn't feel as hard because I've kind of self-medicated my brain, right?
Which is
so
great.
So procrastination, right. And I've been thinking about it in the background. So while I'm having fun and the dopamine's going, I'm more likely to come up with a creative, interesting solution or way to do the project. So
this is
it's
great.
A lot. I've accomplished a lot by goofing off. Right? So.
That's right. You really have. And this question about the subconscious, which is the creative process. I mean, I just think this is a great question. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
So here's another one. How do we use this play perspective to organizing and prioritizing ourselves and the tasks we need to accomplish each day? It's also a good question.
Yeah. You know, some of that has to do with individual preferences and playful personalities and how you like to do things. So I can tell you that for me, organizing, planning, and prioritizing things is not one of my favorite things to do. But I tell people I still have like 8 different to-do lists, like paper ones that I use, right? So on any day, depending on how I want to organize myself, I can do it a little bit differently. So it gives me some flexibility, and it makes them so that they don't become a boring or routine kind of thing. I also discovered this amazing, amazing process called bullet journaling, which I love. And if you have not seen it yet, I highly recommend you check it out because there are all kinds of ways you can get creative with it. That allows me to organize myself by year, month, and day and keep track of things and also just do like a daily journal. So, and it's something that I like. I put it in a pretty purple notebook I've created just a couple habits around using it so that I make sure and check it.
So where do people find out about this? Where would they go to look it up?
You can just to bulletjournal.com, or you can go on, I will tell you, on Pinterest, there are tons of resources on it because people have gotten really creative about it, about how to use this.
This is a great idea.
So, there's no limit to it. And just the way it's set up is very organized. It just makes sense,
I love it.
Just the basics. Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. And then things like, I have an app that I've actually used. I don't know about everybody else, but I go through a lot of apps. I like trying apps because they all look shiny and fun and interesting. I finally had a coach who one day said to me, you've got to choose like 3 apps that you're going to use for, you know, monitoring all of your stuff, you know, planning, organizing, all that. And I've gotten it down to like 2. So because I use there's one app that I've used for like 5 or 6 years has tasks and to-do lists and my calendar and my contacts and everything, and it's called Informant Pocket or Informant Pro.
Informant?
And I can do
it. Did you say?
Yep, Informant. Informant.
M-A-N-T. Informant?
Yep, Informant. Okay. Yep.
Okay, great.
And again, in my calendar, I can make things different colors. I can assign different icons. It's very easy to use, but there's so many different interesting ways you can make it look good or just fun to use.
Right.
So that's kind of my go-to.
So when you open it up, it's exciting.
Yep.
Yeah, I love that.
Yep.
This is great. Also, the bullet journaling is great because getting people to journal at times can be very difficult.
Yes.
And I used to tell them just bullet point. Don't write a book, just bullet point. So
that's
I want
right.
to look this. This is very interesting.
Well,
I like this a lot.
One of the things you'll notice about this one is the very first page you create an index. So every time you add a new page, if there's a topic like I will write things like some podcasts that I've listened to that I want to remember, or notes from a book will go in there, and I will put the page numbers in the index so that when I want to go back to it to remember what I wrote down, I can find it easily.
Oh, wow.
So, and that's, which, who does that in a journal? People don't do that. They just write.
No.
It just gives you a table of contents in the beginning. So.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Yep.
Oh, this is exciting for me.
Alone. Oh, yeah. I know. That's what I said, too, when I found out about it. It was so much fun. So.
It really is.
And then,
go ahead.
Having another person. So, like, you know, you and I talk about bullet journaling, and I say, oh, go look this up. And then, you know, maybe tomorrow we say, hey, let's meet on Thursday, and you go get a journal, and I'll get a journal. Let's set our journals up and see what kind of ideas you found and I found and how you want to do it, because that way, I spend less time online trying to figure out all the really cool things you can do with bullet journals. And I've got somebody that I'm accountable to for actually starting it, because I'll tell you, because I'll tell you one thing with that bullet journal in particular, start with the basics. I'm just going to tell you that now, because you can get lost online finding all the cool ways to organize yourself, right? Because people are really creative with us, but just start the basics and then go from there.
So you mean the people on Pinterest, are using this in different ways and very creative?
There are tons of websites out there of people who have created really interesting layouts for the pages, or, you know, little designs that you can use, or ways that you can track things. So when you go there, you will see just how adaptable it is. I mean, you can track your water, you know, how much water you're drinking a day. You can track how many times you go to the gym. You can,
that's great.
It's the neatest system. The person who thought it up was brilliant. And the people who adapting it are, even more brilliant. So
thank you for this. And you know, also the idea of accountability partner, like I talk to people a lot of times about that, you know, do you have somebody that you can use as an accountability person? I have people sometimes use me. Text me if you're struggling, and I can be your accountability person. But, you know, I can't always do it. So it's good to have somebody, a buddy, that you can go start things with and just kind of discuss it and have some fun with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is
and
great.
We're fortunate that we're in a time when we can, you know, I've got friends of mine that live all over the country, and we'll call each other and say, do you want to do an accountability session today? And we check in by Skype, and, you know, it doesn't cost anything. They can stay there, we can talk, or we can just work quietly, or we can get on and off and check in with each other to make sure that we're making progress on our tasks. So there's all kinds of ways you can use that accountability. Absolutely. And again, I mentioned earlier, like, I'll do anything if it's with another person, because that to me makes it more fun. So,
yes, me too. Yeah.
Yeah,
I really like. I really enjoy that. So here's another question. What is your favorite? Is that maintenance? I can't read this. To help people give themselves permission to play. What is your favorite mantra to help people give themselves permission to play, especially when we have been told all our lives to buckle down and get working? You have to love
mantra.
This, right?
Oh, my God. Wow. Mantra. This is a new challenge, Justine. We've got to come up with a mantra to give ourselves permission to play.
I love it. This is great.
This is what I can't give this to myself, but I can give this to everybody else. It's the doctor's order. It's the doctor's order.
I love it.
Right?
I love it.
If a doctor gives you a prescription, you go and fill it. Right? We don't know. We go and we take the pills until either they don't work or they don't make us feel good, and then we go get a different one. But when a doctor gives you a prescription, you at least try to do it. And so I'm a doctor.
That's great.
You all need to go play. It's doctor's orders.
So we're not buckling down and getting working. We're going out to play. That was the doctor's order.
You're going out. It was the doctor's orders. You can tell your your wife, your husband, your boss, your kids, I have a doctor's order. And if you want an actual prescription, I will send you one. I have lots of pads.
Would you do that?
I do. I will. I will.
Do that for me. I would love to. I'd love to have that.
Absolutely. Absolutely,
that's
I will.
Great.
I'm going to send you. I'm going to send you a copy of the prescription that I have made up, and it's from the Let's Play Doctor. Right?
You know what? Let's Play Doctor. You know what? If you send that to me, I'll post it on my website. It'll
be
great.
I will send you. I'll send you the PDF of it. Yes, I will.
Oh, that's so funny.
Will.
Let's Play Doctor. Oh, that's so funny. Okay,
yep.
We're gonna play Doctor. Okay, here's another question. How does play help me get myself organized and get things done when I am depressed and feel as if I'm not getting enough done? I get so sad when people are depressed.
Yeah.
Because like yourself, I've been there, and it's not an easy
it's
thing.
It's not.
No.
And again, I think first of all, giving yourself permission to start small. It doesn't have to be big, right? When you're depressed, things seem to pile up, and then we think we've got to take it all on. And that, for anybody, whether you have ADHD or not, it can be overwhelming, and it's impossible to get started. And so it really is almost like putting blinders on and just choosing the smallest task to start with.
Yeah.
And then it's knowing how you like to play. So I had an email from a woman recently who was struggling with some health issues. And she would get up and get on some of her – she has a hat collection, as do I. And so she was talking about the fact that she would get up and she would put on her hat, her fun hat, and she also had a dancing outfit that she liked to put on. And that was how she would get herself going, right? Even if she wanted to lie around on the couch, once she put that on, it kind of just perked her up a little bit.
I love that.
Tell my friends – if I'm having a crappy day, and that's not the same as depression, I realize, but it can feel like crap for a while, I will put on a hat, and I work for the federal government, 3 days a week. Not exactly a playful environment. It's what I call a tacky environment. And I come in with my hats with feathers and bright colors on, and everybody is in a good mood, right? Because this woman, Dr. Millikan's, walking around with a really funny hat on. So,
I love it. You have to send me some pictures of that. That's great.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's so great. We don't think about those kind of things, but, just getting ourselves dressed different ways, it can be so much fun, and
it
just can add to the day in so many ways.
It can.
That's a great idea.
Doing silly things. I mean, and it can be even just, I have to say I used to be a lot more subtle because I would just wear, my favorite underwear. We all have a few pairs of underwear that we really like, and maybe not the men, but the women usually do, right? The ones that we save for a special occasion. What better special occasion than I want to feel better today, right? It's great.
Oh, that's great.
I bought
you're so funny. That's
funny
great.
Socks, right? I bought my kids funny socks. There's some great companies, Blue Q. They make these hilarious socks. And you can buy them all over the place. Blue and then the letter Q.com.
I love
it. They're just hysterical for men and women. And, you just put them on and they're funny. So, yeah.
You know what?
Whatever.
You know what? This is what I find. I'm sure you find this as well. I am the kind of person that would do this. I would buy the funny socks. I would wear the funny socks.
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever notice that there are people that just won't do that? Because it's like, I can't do that.
I do.
What do you mean you can't do
that?
Those
are the khaki people. Those are the khaki people. I'm just going to tell you.
Well, I got to tell you, though, people out in California are very different than people on the East Coast.
I
do miss New York. I have to tell you, they are a little out there here, but I'm hanging in there, believe me. So here's another question. This is about your filing papers, which I love this before. So this person wants to know, how do you make filing papers playful? What do you do?
There's this thing in my kitchen that's called a trash can. It's my favorite thing when I'm filing papers. Because I have two places where papers pile up. And I think that I have to file them or organize them. And when I go through them, what I usually find out is most of them are outdated or not as important as I thought they were. And so I get to throw them in the recycle bin. So, I mean, that right there is kind of like a relief to me and a little bit fun because I feel a little devious that I've kept them so long that I don't actually even need them anymore. But then I hired an organizer one time who told me that she was going to help me get organized. And she created a great filing system for me, but it was in a drawer. And a month later, I started getting notices from bill companies from you know, that I owed money to because I hadn't paid my bills because I forgot they were there. Right? Out of sight, out of mind. If
oh, that's great.
Them, they don't exist. Right? So
right.
Now I have colorful folders. I have I went to the National Association of Professional Organizers conference this year, and I got this great purple Lucite. Yeah, it's this great purple Lucite binder, so I can see that there's stuff in there. I can see that there's stuff in there, that I remember to open it. So, yeah, I mean,
that's great.
It's about either finding a system that's interesting to look at. It's about using colors. It's about you can put really funny characters on the top. I have a neighbor, not a neighbor anymore because I moved, but there's a guy who has a mailbox. He has his regular mailbox, and then he has another mailbox that's up on a pole that's about 15 feet tall that says Bill. And I thought that was hysterical, right? So it's just a funny way to think about it. So again, I will tell you, I know the question wasn't specifically about bills, but for me, that's like the hardest thing to take care of when it comes to organizing things. And using online bill payment is great because then you can just see your statements when you need to, right? Which is usually at the end of the year when you need to put your tax stuff together. Scanners, whether it's on your phone or a flatbed or a printer scanner, are great because then you can file things into electronic files so that they're put away and use one system. You know, don't get, you know, Dropbox and Google Drive and SugarSync and all these other ones because then you're not going to find what you're looking for. But one place where you're going to put all of those things and labeled well with tags. So depending on how you like
it's a great idea.
People don't like having things online, but and do it with a friend. I'm just again, anything you do, you can do with a friend. Even tax parties,
which is
one of the big ones. Yeah.
It's so great. Yeah, I have a client who has her mom come over when she's trying to get organized, and her mom just sits there. She doesn't say anything. She just sits there. So she has somebody there that's just watching her. It's great.
Yep.
It's a great idea.
I ask my son sometimes to come down and sit with me, and he'll be like, I don't want to help you. And I'm like, no, I just need you to sit there. Just bring your game downstairs or whatever and sit on the bed, but don't let me leave until I get this done. And like, he's going to stop me. But he, you know, it works. Because in my head, I'm accountable to my 13-year-old son to get this done.
And
so
I think that's the best. That's a great idea. See, people can do that with their kids. And you know what? It's quality time with your kids, too. Because your kids are sitting with you. You know, they're not upstairs doing other things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
right.
No, that's a great idea. I love that.
Yeah.
The other thing I tell people about filing is I remember years ago just having piles and piles of stuff on my desk at work, and I knew that there was fear in that pile. There was papers that I had to fill out that I didn't know how to fill them out. So I tell people to get a fear folder and just mark it fear, and everything that's fearful, put it in that folder, because then you can throw the rest of the stuff out or file it, but then it's more doable. You're looking at two or three things
that
are fearful. Thank you.
My accountant's going to thank you for that, because every year he sends me stuff that I'm supposed to, like, remember to sign and send in, and I think, good, I got back all my stuff from my accountant, and it just sits there, and then, like, 2 months later, he's like, did you ever mail that in?
So get a fear folder, put it in the fear, and there you go, you can have somebody help you with it, right?
Yeah, and you know what else I like about that is is when we can attach some kind of emotion to it, even if, like, people generally think of fear as being a negative thing, right? But it serves a
right.
purpose. It's, you
but
know,
it works.
Alive.
I mean,
so,
yeah.
But
yeah.
It, we connect to emotions. And so whether you call it the
right.
fear or the outrageously, ridiculously annoying, you know, bills that I've
exactly.
got to take care of.
Exactly. Whatever you
want
to call it.
Right?
It. Whatever.
Yeah. But make it something.
Yeah, put a face on it. Put a face on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Put a face on it with a hat. I mean, whatever you want to do, it doesn't matter. I came up with fear because I know myself.
Yeah.
I was always so afraid of filling these five. It was insurance stuff years ago. Do you remember when
yeah.
you had to fill out insurance forms? I didn't know how to fill them out. Well, they were the easiest things in the world to do, but instead of doing them, I just
yeah.
let them pile up. So
oh,
that's
yeah,
why
I
started to call it.
That's why I went to a cash business. I hate insurance, Justine. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't know about
yeah.
you, but
yeah,
I would work for free before doing that. So.
Yeah, no, I don't take insurance. I don't take insurance.
Yep.
If I do coaching like you, I'm also an MFT. If they want to bill insurance, if they want to do therapy, then they can bill insurance. But I don't take insurance because – you have to
yep.
be kidding. You know how long? No, there's no way.
I know.
And I know I've had a lot of people tell me, don't do it. And I didn't because,
yep.
it was, you know, these were my own insurance forms from, like, you know, you go to a doctor and you
yeah,
have to
yeah,
mail
yeah.
in the bill. Remember years ago, that kind of
yep.
thing?
I was so
overwhelmed by having to fill it out that I would just leave it sit there for months. And there was money piling up there.
Yeah. Money is a big one for people with ADHD. Oh my goodness!
Yes.
How many adults are they struggle with managing it and knowing how much
yes.
they have? And yeah, and again, you know,
I was one of those.
My finance guy. This is how I hire the guys that I do my investments with. I've gone through several of them because I tell them all, you have to have conversations with me on at least a semi-annual basis because otherwise, I don't know what's going on with my money. And they always say, but I send you all of those, you know, all of the reports. And I'm like, that's nice. I don't like looking at those. I got to figure out what they mean every month. And it doesn't make any sense to me because really you need to track month to month, right? So I have to put it
right.
all together.
Right.
I said, you can pull right. it up on your computer screen and look at it all and just have a conversation with me. So,
right.
you know, if they don't
yeah.
do that, then I take my money someplace else because I need somebody who is going to be – who's going to be accountable to having conversations with me every so
yeah.
often about
yeah,
my money.
No, I agree. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And, yes, people with ADHD do struggle a lot with money. And, you know, I didn't know for years, you'll find this fascinating, that you're supposed to pay your bills first before you spend money. I had no idea. when I finally figured that one out, life was going a little bit smoother for me. But, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
come on, that's just, you know, that immediate gratification stuff, you know. I want this,
it's
I'm going to buy it, you know. Yep,
it's important.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, it's all funny.
Right?
If you look back on it, you can laugh, so.
Absolutely.
It's just,
and I do want
yeah,
to tell people, you know, it's so much harder to manage when you're younger. And so
yeah.
I just think, you know, telling people, as you get older, your brain actually is going to continue to mature. And I think around 40 or 45 for me was when all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is getting a little bit easier. It's not as hard anymore. I'm not as crazy anymore. And my friends
right.
may not agree with that. But for me, personally, my experience was that I felt less crazy. So, and things were not as
yeah.
hard for me. So just
yeah.
know that as you get older, it gets easier.
Yes. Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, they all say about emotionally we're younger than our years, especially kids. And,
yeah.
you know, I have
yeah.
two boys. They're 29 and 25. And I kind of sit back and just watch their process. And it's interesting
yeah.
because they know a lot more about themselves than I did at those ages. But still, I'm watching the whole money thing. But I'm just keeping my
yeah.
mouth quiet because it's, you know, you got to learn. You got to
yeah.
learn yourself. You can't tell your kids
yeah.
what to do. They're not going to listen. So,
no.
you know.
I want to get back to this play thing, Justine, because one of the questions
okay.
that I got asked a lot about was,
yeah.
because everybody wanted to hand my book to their kids. And I said, ooh, don't do that. Chapter 6 is about sex.
Okay.
So I'm just telling everybody. you know, why didn't I write the book for, why is it Play ADHD for kids? And my answer to that was, you know what? Kids, their job is to play. The reason they're not playing is because adults are not that smart. So if I teach adults who have ADHD, right, and more adults are starting to get diagnosed now that we're realizing that there's such, you know, a connection.
Right.
So their kids get diagnosed, the adults get diagnosed. And if I can teach kids, adults about how important it is to manage your brain using play or using whatever they want, you know, that's healthy and safe, then they're going to be modeling this for their kids. Their kids are going to be able to manage their ADHD brains way better than we did at younger ages. They're going to be so much healthier, so much more productive. They're going to be able to capitalize on their strengths more. So really, it's the adults right now that need to learn this lesson so that they are giving permission to their kids to be at their best by being playful.
That's an excellent point. And I'm definitely going to take that and remember that too when I work with the parents of kids, because it's hard. I mean, you know, I try to help them to understand what their kids need, but, you know, just to strictly say, you know, they need to play, and they need to play with everything that they do, not only just play and then they have work to do. No, they can play with their work at the same time. It's a great, it's a great idea. I love it. I really love it.
So when your kid's having
amazing.
A meltdown because they can't remember how to do their math homework,
right?
Do it differently, or get up and give them a break and do something fun, so the brain is in a state where they're more able to do the work when later on. But telling them to stay sitting and keep at it is not going to work for you.
No, and you know, one of the things I used to do with my boys when they were younger is I would keep them home from school and I would surprise them and say, okay, you're getting a mental health day today. Let's go get breakfast.
Yeah.
Let's have some fun. And then when we come home, we're going to look at all your missing assignments and get them done. You know, because I'm going to criticize my child. I have ADHD and I'm not getting things done. And I know that they had missing assignments. Of course they do. So I don't want them to feel so overwhelmed that they get depressed, because that's what can happen. So I used to do that all the time for them. Give them a mental health. They loved it. They remembered it. They will remember it. Hopefully someday they'll do it for their own children when they have them, you know, because that's the thing. And give them time. I gave them some time to play during that day as well, which is just so important. You're so right.
Yep.
This is just an incredibly important part of our brain. It really is.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Yep, rather than another school day, you created a great story for your kids to remember.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes, and that's what we all should do, right? Look what you
Absolutely.
Do with your son, which I think is so awesome, you know? It's just great, and he's going to remember that. He's going to have these memories, you know, years to come. He's going to have a great life, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
It just breaks my heart sometimes when I hear some of the stories of some of the people and what they've been through, and it just colors their world, and it doesn't have to. You know, just
That's
laughing
right.
with you now for almost 90 minutes has just really turned my brain on again. I mean, you know, it's Sunday afternoon here. It's Sunday night there. So, I mean, it's great. I had a great time. It was so much fun. It really was.
It's so much fun talking with you as well.
Thank you for being on, and I'd love to have you back on sometime, and we can laugh some more, because I've become close with Lisa Feinberg recently. She loves you and was going to try to call in today, but I think she's with her mom. Yeah, she's the best. I'm meeting all these wonderful people. It's so great.
Excellent. Well, I'll be sending
Thank
you
the
so subscription to play. So you'll have that on the website, too, for everybody. Yep.
Yes, I'm going to do that for everybody. Thank you so much. And listen, I just want to remind everybody while you're still on the phone that they can reach you at playdhd.com or adhdexecutivecoach.com. Is that right?
Actually, that site is down now. I'm consolidating. This is my effort to organize and plan better. So you can find me at KirstenMilliken.com, which is those two sites combined. I didn't get that out to you on time, but so KirstenMilliken.com.
That's okay.
Yep, and on Facebook at PlayDHD.
Yes, which is a great site. I've been looking at that, and that's a great site. So thank you
Thanks.
Again for coming on and making me laugh, because this was just a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And I know you're helping so many people, and I appreciate that so much.
Thanks, Justine. And you are too. So, you know,
thanks.
Doing a great job, and you've had some wonderful hosts, and I'm just grateful to be part of the group that you've got going now. So,
thank you. Thank you so much. And we're going to have you back on. Have a great
sure,
night.
Okay,
enjoy
anytime.
Your night.
Good night.
All right.
Good night,
take
Justine.
Care, Kirsten. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. So thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. That was a great show. I loved having Kirsten on. Loved to laugh, and I hope all of you that are listening really understand the importance of play and laughter. It just really turns our brain on and just makes everything feel so much better. So I want everybody to have a great night, and please remember to stay in the moment. Take care.